Am I on? Yeah? Okay. So, good morning. It's nice to be with you here today on this special Remembrance Sunday. First of all, just to share with you, this summer we went to France. Don't worry, we won't be looking at all my holiday slides. But part of our holiday en route, we went to look at the battlefields in the Battle of the Somme. It's a regular trip that Stephen does with some of the children at his school, and he'd been dying to take us and show us, and so he gave us all work booklets and took us around for our explorations. So on this particular picture is of Louis, because there was another reason for going as well. This war memorial shows Stephen's great-grandfather's name. So there's Louis pointing out his great-great-grandfather's name. And so he died like so many other men in service, leaving a young family behind of six children, one of them being Stephen's grandfather. So on this trip, it led me to much thinking of the soldiers of both World War I and World War II, and obviously those still in conflict today. My main link as a child, others might relate to this, I used to go out every November with my dad selling poppies, or I'd join in a march as a brownie. My brother was an army cadet, and we'd be part of a ceremony, marching and watching the wreath upon wreath being laid at the local war memorial as a mark of respect to those who sacrificed their today for our tomorrow. And we obviously know this will be taking place on the market square today. We hear of many people taking a pride in serving their country, but we also hear of many people not being able to talk about what they experienced in the war. There are some who obviously wrote poetry, the Rupert Brookes, the Siegfried Sassoons, which express some of the horrors they encountered, some of the bleakness. This particular one, it doesn't come up so well there, but of Flanders Field by Lieutenant Colonel John McCree, asking us, or then the reader, to take up the cause now with the foe, for they are no longer able to, because they are no more. In the museums we visited, and we were reading lots of memorabilia about the wars, it did come over, and some of the letters that had been written home by the soldiers to their loved ones that seemed to skim over the horrors of what they encountered, and talking about just the general stuff and the community spirit. But you can understand it, can't you, not wanting to worry those back home, so only talking about perhaps the more positive sides. Many did not come back, so what they encountered stayed with them. But what of those that did come back? This gentleman, you may well have heard of him, his name's Harry Patch, and he was known as the last surviving Tommy. He died at 101 years old. And for 80 years, he kept it in what he experienced. It was just too painful to express. But at 101 years old, he finally talked about it. He says it wasn't worth it, all that loss of life. But I think there was also a sense of pride that he was able to serve his country. But yeah, for 80 years, he kept all that in. Last year and for 3 years, I was visiting some of the older people at Adam Brooks Hospital. There was a gentleman who asked if he could talk to me about something. It sat heavy on him for many years. It was to do with being a soldier. It was his part in the war. He'd seen people lose their lives around him, many, but he also wanted to talk about how difficult it had been for him that he too had to take life. He too had deprived others of having a brother or a husband. He wanted to confess his own responsibility for taking life too, as well as the horrors he had encountered. It was commonplace and it weighed heavy on him. He felt the guilt, but it did him well to talk about it, to finally talk about it, to get it out of his system, to talk about it to me, but to bring it to the Lord. It was for king and country, and it was a part of his duty, but it weighed heavy on him. Another gentleman I spoke to, he spoke about when his father came home from the war, that he couldn't speak about what had happened, but he did start to shout out in his sleep, something he'd never done before. Could it be that this man was suffering from what we now know to be post-traumatic stress? He was seeing flashbacks of the daily traumas that he'd had to live with. He mentioned to his father, this is very sad, he mentioned to his father started to lash out at them as children. He'd never done that before the war. So what had war done to this man? And why could we as a society not help him to recover for what he had endured? Many obviously remember the community spirit, the good stuff that came from the war, people really pulling together, looking out for each other. And the Second World War especially was a great time for some women who were finding their way in the workforce for the first time. There were obviously those who were employed to boost morale, the Virilins who sang in good cheer for the troops. So there are obviously some silver linings to the many clouds. But in the main, we remember, and we will always remember, those that served today, and the significant loss of life. We reflect, express our respect for the lives of these young soldiers who never came home, and we think about how that loss would have impacted their loved ones and the nation as a whole. It changed. But hey, it was never God's will. It was never God's will we endure such huge, significant loss and grief. But it is God's will to help us walk through the shadow of death, the painful path of grief, to come through with him as a healer, a sustainer, an enabler, to be our strength through such gut-wrenching, heart-breaking grief, and for us to be able to lament fully, properly, in order for that to take place. Lament isn't a word we often hear in general conversation, but for those who are unaware, as I have been unaware in the past, it expresses passionately, fully regret, sorrow, complaint, grief. It's more than just talking generally about a problem. It comes from deep, deep within us. In the Bible, we hear of many who've encountered significant loss and how it is God who upheld them, sustained them, worked with them through the pain, bringing them on to an eventual better place, providing them with hope. And God is still very much in the habit of doing this today, and he truly can be, as many of us know here, can be our rock in troubled times. In ancient Israel, it was commonplace to lament before God, to fully let out the pain, the anguish, the bitterness that might have erupted from what had been encountered, to seek forgiveness for their own part, corporately, together, asking for God's intervention for their nation, for their own personal circumstances, seeking his help, his blessing. And this was often done as a corporate group of people together. There are other ways, obviously, we can be helped with damaged emotions, and many of us would be able to testify to being helped by the medical profession, the love, the support of good friends and family, a combination of this, for which hopefully God can be centre to that. But what is it about lamenting that was so key to ancient Israel? This expression of honest emotion erupting from a person's spirit, connecting with God's spirit, the author, the sustainer of all life. Is this not something that needs to be encouraged more in our Christian life today? Right, we're going to do now what ancient Israel would have done. I'm going to invite for those who are able to stand, please. And join me as we read Psalm 13 together. So I will guide us through, and we'll obviously pause at the relevant areas. So, How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer me, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death, and my enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. Thank you. You may sit. So I'm currently a part-time student at Ridley Theology College, and this particular psalm is one that we'd been looking at. And we were to create our own psalms, which were based on this structure. But I'll come on to that in a bit. So psalms can be found, obviously, many of us are hopefully aware, in the Old Testament, between Job and Proverbs. And what are they? They're a type of structured poetry. They're often at the heart of Jewish and Christian worship. Ancient Israel used the Psalms as their book for worship, and it's still very commonplace for the Jews today. There's a very well-known Psalm, 137, which is often used in Jewish and Christian liturgy. Some may know it better as the Boney M song, "By the rivers of Babylon, where we sat down when we remembered Zion." Together, the people in this psalm, the Jewish people in this, they weep as they're being held captive by their oppressor, longing for their release, being demanded to sing for their captors, and them not wanting to do this as they're in a foreign land. They were longing for the happy times they had shared in Jerusalem. That may resonate with some of the soldiers of World War I and World War II all over. A pride of serving for your country, but they didn't really have much choice. They're being stuck in a foreign land with the enemy, away from home, remembering loved ones, having to do some things very much against their will. Could a communal lamenting together have helped them with the difficulties they encountered, like ancient Israel used to do, come together lamenting of those difficulties so they could come through a better place of healing? Expressing honestly together how hard it had been, but how there's new hope for tomorrow. Could this help us with our own personal griefs, tragedies for the state of the nation, coming together corporately to lament fully about those things, coming through it, coming to a greater place of hope? In the 150 psalms that make up the Book of Psalms, known as the Psalter, a third of these psalms are on lament. So how do psalms of lament help us? Well, they're incredibly honest. They teach us it's okay to express complete honesty to God, bitter, angry thoughts we may be having. They teach us not to cover up hurts, deny despair, to pretend everything's fine with God when it so obviously is not. Psalms of lament acknowledge emotions and can bring us comfort in a season of hurt. Psalms of lament help us to process situations in a structured way. Psalms of lament encourage gut-wrenching honesty and admit the fear, the anguish that's being encountered by the sufferer. But two, psalms of lament can guide us through to an eventual better place. We go on a journey in true lamenting. We're not left in a kind of hopelessness, or if you like, in a victim-type way. If you think of that dreadful chat show, which I think's banned now, Jeremy Kyle, the guests there are encouraged to bear it all, tell of the pain, tell the difficulty. But then what's happened? They have a big gaping wound for the audience to poke and jeer at. No constructive healing's taken place. People will leave in a worse place than when they came in. That, as we know, is not God's way. He has our best interests at heart. He knows how to work with us, what process we need to go through before healing and comfort can come. In him, we are understood. It's a bit like a toddler. Sometimes you've got to get it out your system. There's a real raging at God. And in return, like this small child, he's comforted by his mother or his father. There's calm in the child. But that calm can only come after the child has been allowed to scream, to shout, to let it out. And then when it is out, then the comfort, the peace of the loving parent, and in this case, our loving God, truly comes through. So Psalms of Lament take us on a structured journey. So what can be found on a Psalm of Lament? You will hear them often in Psalms of Lament, lamenting about their enemies, complaining, my God, why have you forsaken me? Sometimes there's a protestation of innocence. If I have done this, then there's guilt on my hands. Sometimes you might hear cursing. In your steadfast love, cut off my enemies. Sometimes you will hear a plea, save me because the waters are up to my neck. And then you will hear a vow of confidence. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you are with me. And you will hear a determined vow of praise. I will declare your name forever. And then you just spontaneous praise. I will give you praise. So, if we could go back to Psalm 13. So what do we see here? Psalm 13, written by King David. We hear in verse 1 and verse 2 a complaint. David asked the Lord, how long? He asks it four times in this psalm. He felt forgotten by God. He felt that the Lord was hiding his face from him. God wasn't doing that, but that's what David felt like. He felt sorrowful. He felt depressed. Verse 3, we hear a plea. He cried to the Lord about his enemy being exalted over him. He cried to the Lord to consider his questions, to answer him. David wanted the Lord to metaphorically open his eyes, to give him insight into his situation. We see in verse 4, lamenting, David felt if the Lord did not help him, that he would die and his enemies would boast about defeating him. So he's getting it all off his chest, basically. But we come to number 5, verse 5, and we see a declaration of praise. David's attitude is changing. He proclaims trust in the loving kindness of the Lord and rejoices in the God of his salvation. And in verse 6, we see him just praising God. He's determined to sing to the Lord. And he remembers that God's been good to him in the past. And it's in his character to be good to him now. In verse 6, you might relate to some of this. Many times we've had the same emotions of David did in this psalm. We wonder, has God heard our prayer? How long will we have to wait for good health, a job, the salvation of a loved one, or maybe even good news of a loved one on the battlefield? We can learn how David handled his frustration. He honestly turned to the Lord. He laid it all before God. When he did this, the Lord was able to work with his attitude from one which was dominated by fear to one which became dominated by faith. He received loving kindness and comfort came. As I mentioned a bit earlier, at college we had to create our own psalm. And this was in part of our studies of the Old Testament. So, and this was following the Hebrew framework in Psalm 13, which we have looked at. In my own psalm, personally, I would have preferred a little bit more free rein. I felt a little bit restricted, but had a set word count. So you may find writing your own psalm, giving yourself total free rein, is something you may find helpful in your own faith journey, in your own journey of restoration. Both communally and individually, this type of lamenting could have been something incredibly, and can be something incredibly beneficial for our soldiers in the past, but the ones with us today. So this was written out of an experience I was having at the time. Come, Lord, come quick, Lord, I feel anxious. I need your help. come now. I look to you in the depths of the deep. I seek you in the highest of the heights. Where are you, Lord? I feel cut off, so alone. Those who do not comprehend me. Continue to cause pain. Willingly they misunderstand. Why, Lord, why? Rise up, open their minds, make them see. Get them away from me, Lord, in your dealings. Show them who you are. For in you, Lord, I am understood. In you, Lord, I can put my trust. I know your love protects me. I will praise your name forever. So now, I'd like it if we could take a couple of minutes silence to think through, to reflect. Maybe bring your own form of lament to the Lord. Or maybe it's right for you just to sit, to be still, to be quiet. What might the Lord be wanting to speak into your soul from what has been shared? Please use this silence really well.